This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. Each week we explore the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. In today's episode we have two guests to discuss kinky literature and electrical play. Here's our hosts Woody and the Beast.
Thank you, Max, and we have a guest in the studio tonight along with the Beast. How are you, Beast?
I'm good, Woody. I'm good. And with me, Woody, I have the lovely Kate Kinsey, author, thought-provoker, and generally a kinky woman.
Thank you, Beast.
And she purrs so sweetly. And Kate is with us today to shed some light on both her book and this phenomenon known as the 50 Shades of Grey and what this has done for our community and our lifestyle. Welcome, Kate.
Hi. It's great to be here.
And who are you, Kate?
Well, let me go through my labels. I am a fine artist, a graphic artist, a writer, submissive sometimes, kinkster, poly-ish, pagan-ish, and generally crazy person.
So many labels.
I know.
Are you fond of labeling yourself?
No, but it's one of the things I noticed when I got into this lifestyle is that everything had to have a label, and I just kept gathering labels.
Well, we like to put everything in a box. You're a writer?
Yes.
A novelist, I believe, is a better term.
It's a fancier term. Money's the same, which isn't very good, but...
And we have in front of us your novel, Red. Tell us about Red.
Red is my first attempt. I had written and published four vanilla novels under another name. But a couple of years ago, my agent suggested that I give erotica a shot. Because erotica was, and this is even before 50 Shades of Grey, was the only book genre that was rapidly thriving.
And is it continuing to thrive today?
Yes, it is. It's, romance has always been 60% generally of the book-buying public market is hugely romance, and erotica being a subgenre underneath that. But I had never tried to write it in expectation of publishing. I had written it for fun.
I have read some of those works, and they're quite entertaining, quite stimulating.
You've inspired quite a few of those works, but we won't talk about that now. And so I started trying to write an erotic romance, but I am a very non-romantic, very pragmatic, very cynical, and offbeat person, and my attempt to write an erotic romance turned into a BDSM murder mystery.
And it kept me turning pages all the way through.
Well, luckily, that's what a lot of people have told me. I succeeded in putting together a pretty damned exciting little plot that keeps people guessing in several different directions. I think the best review I've had on Amazon, someone called it awesome and disturbing.
It is disturbing. I can definitely see some CSI elements in their inspiration, I should say, in your descriptions of the crime scenes.
Well, I definitely wanted to be accurate and truthful and not gloss over, but I think a few of the scenes gets a little gory for some people's taste.
Well, but some of the sex scenes get equally hot.
Yeah.
We're in the day of CSI and Bones and these other rather graphic TV shows for the general public. And so murder mysteries on TV and pulp and other forms have been around for a long time. They're very popular. You've just combined the BDSM sex angle with a murder mystery.
I think that sums it up.
I'll give just a little bit of the story away. It opens in an adult bookstore with a very graphic scene between a submissive and her dominant.
Well, see, now you've already given something away there.
they will discover that in the first few pages.
That's true.
And they won't be able to stop themselves thereafter. Now, what about this 50 Shades of Grey? It's a phenomenon. It's radically changed the landscape both for the BDSM community and I think for the broader world. When I was on the beach this past summer, it was difficult for me, being who I am and my goal to reach out to people, mm-hmm. to see all these housewives, mothers, soccer moms, and so forth, reading 50 Shades, and a few others reading 50 Shades of Grey knockoffs.
And you wanted to stop and give them your personal take on a guided tour through BDSM and kink?
I wanted to be sure that they fully appreciated it and had everything that they needed to go home and practice.
That's what we love about you. You're such an educator.
He's giving, isn't he?
He really is.
But these books, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. It seemed like for a couple of months, everywhere I went, I literally was in the break room at work, and two people were carrying on a conversation about 50 Shades. I walked down the hallway, and I passed someone at her desk on her lunchtime reading 50 Shades. I went downstairs in the elevator and out to the smoking area where two women were again discussing 50 Shades of Grey. Literally could not get away from it.
And this is such a change because this is, 50 Shades is definitely a role in erotic book, even sexual by nature, and it's bubbling over into the workplace as such common conversation.
Well, that's the really amazing thing about 50 Shades of Grey. Even aside from any type of book, I don't think there's been any book in recent history that has so swept over all readers of all ages and demographics and been generating so much conversation.
I couldn't imagine the story of old being water cooler conversation or Venus and Furs or any of those.
Well, none of them have reached that wide an audience. This was a perfect storm of, number one, E.L. James wrote it as Twilight fan fiction, so she already had a fan base that was eager to read it on the Twilight fan fiction website. They were able to carry word of mouth very quickly. She sold a huge number of books even before she had Random House offering her seven figures to republish what she had done under a small press out of Australia.
This is simply perfect storm. The demographic it hit was the new social media generation that's much more out about their lives than we have seen.
That was probably a starting point, but if you look at the demographics of the book, there is a lot of older women that have grasped this in their late 40s. It's starting to change their life. So you have the Twilight base on the front end of the age group, but then you have this second group, and certainly I've heard people talking about it that I would not expect to be approaching the idea of a sexual novel. You know, maybe the romance novels, the books that people kept in their bedrooms and things like that, those have been around for many years. But this is breakthrough really into hard BDSM.
With some graphic sexual scenes in it, and here we have people that we would never think to be having these discussions openly.
But I would point out as one, I read a really great review on why they thought 50 Shades of Grey dealt with BDSM and such, you know, kinky sexuality and was so readily accepted by such a wide readership because of the fact that just like any reading, you can stick your toe in different waters and in a very safe way. But even in the course of the plot of the book, Anastasia is the heroine of the novel, and she goes into this, but she's never truly co-opted into the idea of kink. She's always the outsider, and she saves Christian from a life of perverted, degrading sadism.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
Well, but that is the romance novel pattern that it's molded after, is the heroine or the hero save the other.
See, I don't think this book would have been such a success if it had had Anastasia coming out as a hardcore masochist. Because then the largely vanilla audience would have drawn back. They wanted to be a nice little tourist, I think, without committing to the idea that this is a healthy and perfectly acceptable...
Which brings us to the ideal that this actually, though, has made people go from being sticking their toe in the water, as you say, to actually beginning to reach out and explore this in a more physical way.
There are a couple of things that I would say. I mean, you've got a book that sold 70 million copies worldwide. It dominated the New York Times bestseller list for over 50 weeks, and it earned Random House $200 million. So this is a book with a huge impact, not just socially, but on the book industry. And as a writer, I had to pay attention to that. I mean, when something like this happens, it's a seismic earthquake. But then there's the fact that there are some good things about the book and there are some bad things about the book.
What's a good thing about the book?
Well, the good things about the book is it's mildly amusing and mildly erotic for about the first 20 pages. But that's coming from me, and, you know, one of the things that I told somebody, they said, did you like the book? I said, well, I said, you know, they call this, you know, BDSM erotica. I call it Friday Night. So I'm a little more jaded than a lot of the readership. But it does show Anna learning something about the sensual side of BDSM and her initial repulsion of and total refusal to be spanked. Gives way to some experimentation where she says, okay, this isn't too bad. And that's a good thing.
Now, as a professional writer.
Yes.
You have, I believe, 5 novels to your credit.
Yes.
What's wrong with it?
What's wrong with it? It is terribly badly written. I mean, I really had to read the books. As a writer and as a kinkster, I needed to read them. I read all 3 as quickly as I could, and by the end, I was just begging for it to be over. It's the language is repetitive. She uses the same words and phrases over and over. One of the reviewers said that if you took all the parts of Anna blushing, chewing her lip, and saying, oh, geez, the book would only be about 4 pages long. And that's not really an exaggeration. The story is really improbable. I mean, you start with a 20-year-old virgin who literally falls into a handsome, single, straight, rich, well-hung dominant. Yeah, that happens all the time.
Wait a minute. Oh, I'm not rich.
No, you're not rich. And you don't have a plane either.
It'll leave the young out also.
Age is relative. Age is relative. To a 70-year-old, I'm still young.
But the biggest thing that is wrong with this book, in my humble opinion and in the opinion of many BDSM people, is that it seems to follow, the underlying principle seems to be that BDSM is something that's only done by people who are broken or damaged. Not just the lead character, Christian Grey, who is severely damaged, who has such self-loathing for his own sexual needs, but you've got his former sub who shows up with a gun in a major psychotic break that requires hospitalization. You've got the woman who introduced Christian to BDSM, who, according to the book, is a controlling, jealous pedophile.
Ooh.
And Anna is hugely disgusted by the fact that this woman took advantage of Christian before he was of full legal age. And, you know, there's a lot you can talk about there.
But seeing that many of the people are reading through the faults of the novel and latching on to the excitement that the play activities that are spotlighted in the book can bring to their lives.
Anything that encourages people to explore sexuality, encourages them to be open-minded, gets people wet or hard, you know, all that's good. And that's overridingly the biggest thing I can say. If it starts a conversation between two people that leads to more honesty, better communication, and a more fulfilling sex life, then everything else be damned. It's okay.
Will the books send a flood of tourists our way?
Oh, yeah. It already has. Some of them will be sincere people who... and this is one of those things where you're never sure. Are you attracted to something because you're already bent a certain way? Or just being exposed to something caused you to bend in that direction.
Well, that's the whole nature-nurture argument, and that's for another show.
Exactly. That's the other thing that I have to say is good about 50 Shades. You know, I've been kinky practicing for about 12 years, but very early on I realized that there were certain things that turned me on. I wanted sexual domination. I wanted to be swept away. And I remember the first time I ever saw something outside of my own mind that reflected that, I read Anne Rice's Sleeping Beauty series, which is hugely improbable, over-the-top fantasy.
And Miss Rice has divorced herself from all discussions of those novels.
Oh, no, she's back now.
She's back now?
She's back now. In fact, she's republished Sleeping Beauty with a new cover, trying to capitalize writing on the coattails of 50 Shades.
Well, she's a good
businesswoman. Exactly. It's a smart thing.
I once thought that this was going to be sending women our way. But just yesterday, I was corresponding with some new potential candidates, and they said that they've been overwhelmed with men wanting to live out their 50 Shades fantasies. The couple I was speaking with were two women, both looking for one dom, and they said their mailboxes were filling up with men without a clue that are trying to capitalize on the 50 Shades phenomenon.
I can certainly believe that, because right now the male market is flooding in also to answer the needs from the women that are flooding in.
Men are looking for that edge, and if they think 50 Shades is going to give them that edge, they're going to try it.
But unfortunately, without the training, the background, the mentoring, and all the things that go with it, they are just stalking.
It becomes a dangerous combination, prone to accidents and so forth. Now, you speak of other erotica. We have the Marketplace series. We have the Marketplace series with Laura.
Laura Antoneau, a fine writer who's written the Marketplace series, which is a benchmark for a lot of people.
But isn't that novel heretofore been just a BDSM community novel?
Very much so. I have not. Laura is a friend of mine, but I have not had a chance to discuss with her whether she's seeing a whole lot of outside growth from the 50 Shades overflow. I know that she's written a new book called The Killer Wore Leather. And if you're looking for something fun and really just hysterically funny to read, I highly recommend it.
Okay, we'll make a note of that. So we've covered The Sleeping Beauty, which again is very improbable.
It is, but like what I started to say about that was that when I discovered it, suddenly it was like, oh my God, this woman has been in my head. How did she know that I fantasized about things like this?
About huge phalluses hung on the wall and being set on them for hours on end?
No, I hadn't gotten quite that far. I was still in the very tame end of the pool with being paraded naked through a town and tied up and put on display and all of those types of things.
When you were actually a fairy tale princess?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yes, has to say, so believable. But anybody that hasn't read it and are looking for the series is very entertaining.
But, you know, I did want to read something to you, and this might explain a lot, explains a lot to me about me, and it goes back to that whole thing of nature versus nurture. I'm going to read this paragraph and tell me if you know where it came from. For the first time in her life, she had met someone, something stronger than she, something she could neither bully nor break, someone who was bullying and breaking her. He had humbled her, hurt her, used her brutally through a wild, mad night, and she had gloried in it. Stronger than shame was the memory of rapture, of the ecstasy of surrender. For the first time in her life, she felt alive.
I'm going to be dangerous because I know a little bit about you. And I'm going to guess this is Gone with the Wind.
Yes, it is. It's Gone with the Wind. And it just shows you how there are elements out there of dominance and submission in the weirdest places.
Definitely, that was a place I never would have thought it. That novel was published in the 20s?
Published in the 30s.
In the 30s. I would never have thought that in that period in American culture, when we were still repealing alcohol.
Well, if you go back and you read Gone with the Wind with a kinky eye, Rhett Butler is so much of a dominant, and he was the first man I ever fell in love with, and he's such a dominant and I wanted to be grabbed and carried up the stairs by that kind of a dominant male.
But I will admit that I did read a blurb on the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom's website about vanilla sex coming back again. 50 Shades of Vanilla, I believe they headlined this article.
That's right. Yeah.
Has a rebound from the 50 Shades phenomenon.
I'm not following exactly what they're saying. People are having more sex in general, or
they are going back to vanilla. They are rediscovering
less
vanilla.
Kinky.
Oh.
Yeah.
And from my perspective, anything that promotes the sexual conversation in America is a good thing.
Yes, sex of any kind is good by me.
Some people have found that it's too racy, too fast for them. It was an interesting read, but they need to back away from it.
And I think that will eventually level itself out in our community. We have a very transient tourist population in the BDSM community as people come in, explore, and then realize this is not something they want a steady diet of. I want to thank Kate Kinsey for coming in and joining us today.
Well, thank you so much. And I have one question before we let her go.
Certainly.
The title of your book is Red.
Red.
And what are you referring to there?
The universal safe word stop figures quite prominently in this. When I thought about it after the fact, I realized it probably was, from a marketing standpoint, not the best title for something, because there are so many things out there that are already titled Red. And in fact, if you go to Amazon and you try to find the book, you really have to Google Red by Kate Kinsey, or you will be wading through 300 pages of things with Red in the title. But it really does sum up the whole concept of when to stop and going beyond limits and boundaries figures quite prominently in the book.
Well, our listeners can wade all the way through our hot links and find a link to Kate Kinsey's book on Amazon, and also on our FetLife page we'll have a picture of the cover up there so that people can have a look, see what the book looks like. And it's available for Kindle, I believe.
It's available for any type of ebook, and it's also available in paperback now.
Fantastic. Well, you've come a long ways, and certainly bringing more of the kinky view to the great American public out there. And we welcome comments about this and experiences. Maybe if you've read it and want to say a few words about this or 50 Shades of Grey, our phone lines are waiting for your calls. Leave a voicemail or send an email, or even if you want to go to the Bashful tab and send it anonymously, we'll certainly be glad to get you onto the Kinky Cast in the future.
Oh, there was one thing I did want to point out, a major difference between my novel and 50 Shades of Grey. I made a real effort. One of the reasons I wrote it was I wanted the BDSM perverts to be the good guys. I was so tired of every time you found whips and chains in somebody's basement, they turned out to be a serial killer. So I wanted to do an antidote to that. I also wanted a book that would touch on the reality of BDSM and not just the fantasy. There's nothing wrong with finding emotional and sexual release and enjoyment in a totally fantasy-oriented book like 50 Shades or Sleeping Beauty or The Marketplace. The danger comes when you don't recognize that that is fantasy and not a reality that you can actually live.
Well said.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kate, for coming in. Listeners, please call us with your comments and thoughts on the book and the phenomenon that led from this book and 50 Shades and various other books. So call us with your reads.
Next up on the show is Uncle Abdul's talk about electrical play, which is in the edge category. So we don't want to scare any beginners, but this is a very knowledgeable person that wrote the book Juice. So we have two books on the show today, Juice and Red.
Uncle Abdul literally wrote the book on electrical play for BDSM.
It is the reference. And it is coming out again. It's being republished in a third printing, I believe.
Excellent, excellent. It's a must-read for anybody that is wanting to explore this area. So we're happy and grateful to have Uncle Abdul coming to us.
On the phone, I'd like to welcome Uncle Abdul, the genius of electrical play and the author of Juice, the Bible of electrical play for BDSM. How's it going, Unc?
Doing pretty good, Woody. How are you?
Well, we're having a great time out here getting the podcast going and getting a lot of new audience. I think people will be very interested in hearing what you have to say about electrical play.
A lot of the shows that I present at and things of that sort, a lot of people seem to still be interested, and I have great conversations with everybody, and they learn from me, and actually I learn from them.
Well, that's great that community can work in both ways and share a lot of knowledge. You know, there's a certain amount of mysticism in electrical play. People don't really understand it. There's a danger in it, certainly, that you can end up killing yourself with it.
That's true, yep. Under worst-case scenarios, sure.
I remember sitting in the seminars that you teach. Let's see, you have this thing called a 9-inch piece of meat.
Yeah, right. I use that as an illustration for the physiology of electrical play, in that, you know, currents actually travel through the body in a distributed way. And actually, to tell you a little bit about the genesis of the book, I was living in Russia in eastern Siberia at the time, in the city of Khabarovsk, and had a lot of time on my hands. So in the process of writing the book, I was thinking, okay, what kind of experiment can I use to illustrate what's going on inside the body when you apply a current externally to it? And so I set up a little salt bath experiment and, was able to trace out the current paths under various electrode configurations. Unfortunately, my website's still under reconstruction, but I do have a new ISP. So once I get that back up, the results of that experiment will be available again.
Well, when you get that site up, please let us know and we'll get it published on our Hot Links page.
Absolutely, yes.
You present seminars on electrical play for quite a number of years. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, how you got there?
Well, actually, it goes back to my first job out of as an electrical engineer out of college, which would have been back in 1966. And one of the first jobs I had was doing some safety tests on medical equipment. And so I had to do some studies around it. The underwriter's laboratory testing tables showing current effects in the body. So that was my first introduction to it. I was kind of doing studies on and off since then. And then when I got into kink in San Francisco, that's when I saw my first electrical play demonstration, started thinking more seriously about the kink applications of that.
And it's come a long ways from there.
Oh, yeah, right.
I remember back in the early 2000s, we were sitting in my place out there in Santa Clara playing with a violet wand and wondering why it was destroying electronics in my apartment. And
Yes, right.
Somewhere I had the...
I still have to apologize for ruining your CD player on that one demo we did in Sacramento.
Well, at least we learned something at that point, and we pulled out an oscilloscope and measured that there's 900-volt spikes that come off a violet wand that are shot back into the house current and travel through your house to attack your electronics.
That's true, yes, right. It's not just single spikes. So a surge protector on a outlet strip is not going to prevent that, or is not going to save that.
So when you're visiting other people's houses, be kind and don't plug in near their electronics.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, that's one of the things I talk about in my classes. And I make sure that when I'm doing a presentation that, I'm not plugged into the same circuit as a sound system or a nearby computer or the computer projector or whatever.
Otherwise, it could be a very short presentation.
Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And some very unhappy people.
Let's talk about TENS play a little bit. All TENS units are not created equal. You have the little yep. medical units that the your chiropractor will give you. You've got muscle stimulators that you can buy through physical therapy and online. And then mm-hmm. there's the kink world, where things mm-hmm. change completely. Some people think a TENS is a TENS of TENS. What's your opinion?
The way I break down electrical toys is what I call TENS and TENS-like units. So that would include the medical TENS units that you use to, you know, give relief to your sore shoulder, all the way to the Folsom boxes, the PES boxes, the numerous other TENS toys, and even up to the Aerostech 312, which is like the Cadillac of TENS units, and even to some extent, some of the do-it-yourselfers attempts at hooking themselves up to their stereo system and computers. The reason I call it TENS and TENS-like units is that they're all operating on lower voltages. Like normally you wouldn't get more than 100 volts. Even though that, you know, you're using a 9-volt battery in your TENS unit, it still goes to the transformer before it comes to the output leads.
Yeah, some of them can have a pretty good kick.
Some of them have pretty good kick, particularly the ones that are used for muscle stimulation or EMS machines, electromuscular stimulators, the kind that therapists use, because they have to deliver more energy in order to get the muscle moving.
So what's the major difference between a medical unit and a kinky unit?
A medical unit, the simple answer is the medical unit manufacturers have better insurance.
Okay.
They've engineered the product. They've made sure that it is safe as possible. It goes along with the science that they've developed with TENS units. Some of this you can see online if you do a couple of suitable Google searches. And also the kink box manufacturers, they've basically copied the circuits and have done their own research. A lot of the kink manufacturers are pretty clever engineers and electronics designers. Their units are pretty good and pretty reliable. It's something like you could almost say there's an intrinsic safety in TENS boxes as long as you don't use them to do really risky or dangerous tasks.
I think I certainly agree with that. What I've found is in the medical units, they typically don't have the oomph, or certainly they don't have the pulse train that the kinky ones do. You know, the kinky ones are designed for orgasms and that sort of thing, and with build-up and all that. Like the ET-312, there's some wonderful programs in there to get somebody going sexually, whereas the medical units are great for taking a pain out of your back. Completely different use.
Now, the one thing I do recommend in people starting out with electrical play and using a starting off with TENS units is that, you know, if you buy a simpler medical TENS units, which you can sometimes get for like in the range from $30 to $40 because of the simpler number of controls on them, this is a great machine to see how these things operate. And if you decide that electrical play is not for you, you haven't done a massive investment in your toy collection, plus the fact that you also learn, okay, this is what intensity does, this is what frequency does, and this is what pulse width does. So even though it doesn't have the different number of programs that you can get from the more complex units, you can still train yourself and your partner in the use of these things.
I know on the medical units, I like to turn the frequency way down to very low and get more of a kick.
And the intensities aren't necessarily as great as, you know, like you get out of the Folsom box.
Right. My friend down in Atlanta was showing me that there is a trick on the ET-312. You can put it in high output mode. I didn't even know about that. And that gives you a lot more range for doing nasty, fun, physical things.
Oh, yes, definitely. As a matter of fact, I've taught a couple of courses in how to understand and use your ET-312 box.
Very valuable for anybody that has one. They are a great box. And, you know, the ET-312 has been the gold standard since about 2003. It really has staying power.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is about the first time they came out. And interestingly enough, I bought my first one for like $220.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think they're up around $450, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, they are. The price has gone up quite a ways. I remember when they first came out, boy, they called and said, we've got it in. Get down here fast before we give it away.
That's right, yeah.
It was a great thing because it's given a lot of pleasure to a lot of people.
Yeah, now the builders of that that box, the developers of that box, really did a good engineering job on that. And they spent a lot of time foolproofing it, putting in a lot of really good features and making it an extremely flexible machine.
Let's talk about safety.
Okay. That's what I usually start off with in my programs.
Absolutely. You know, I've got your book here in front of me. As soon as you open it to the table of contents, you start talking about safety because it is such a critical thing. The old idea that electricity can kill you. Absolutely can. If you do it wrong,
yes.
People that use stereo equipment for electrostim, please be careful. I never recommend this because the currents are not limited like a TENS unit.
That's correct.
And
that's correct, yes.
There's also a thing called a ground loop, and that gets you between the house electrical system and some wrong parts of your body. You could really kill yourself doing this sort of thing. And I do know a person that died from this. They had a big old Crown amplifier, DC 300, that will produce over 100 volts at several amps continuously from
yes.
DC on up. And they literally just, something went wrong with the pulse generator, and it literally cooked them.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
So I don't recommend playing with the audio equipment for muscle stimulation. Stick with the devices that are made for that. You've always had
That's
advice
correct.
About not above the waist until you know what you're doing. How's that work?
Actually, that's the first recommendation that is included in the book. It tends towards operating safely. My whole thrust in the book and my presentations when I talk about electrical safety is that, you know, it's not a rules skill. It's not a hand-eye-body coordination skill. It's a thinking skill. You have to understand the processes that are involved of physics, physiology, and psychology, then determine the risk in the play that you want to do, and then decide whether you want to take that risk or not. If you're doing solo play, or if it's you and your partner, you decide as to whether the risk is worth the reward, and you know, just understand the processes, and if you play with it, then always think of, okay, what's my escape procedure? What's my backup procedure if I need it? Now, fortunately, if you do things from that perspective, always think of what you're doing if you're the person on the controls and you play with the idea of doing things safely, then, you know, the chances are far, far reduced of having anything really bad happening with you. You might get a hot spot and, you know, something might go ouch rather than ooh. But it's not going to be the first sign of something going wrong is that your heart stops, which is not what you want it to do.
Yeah, that's not necessarily the first thing I want to go wrong.
That's correct, right. And that's why I recommend to my classes, you know, I ask for how many here have their CPR certificates?
Yeah, not so many.
And even the bottom who's going to be the receiver of the stimulation, you know, one of the questions they should ask is, well, Sir Top, how is your heart condition? Because if you're strung up the guy has the box cranked all the way up and you're dancing around and all of a sudden he keels over, what are you going to do?
Boy, how true is that? Medical conditions on both sides can be an issue.
That's correct, yes. Yeah, and actually when I was doing my studies in Russia, I actually looked at, okay, what are the electrical conductivities of different body fluids? So resistivity of sweat, the resistivity of pee, the resistivity of spit, the resistivity of mucus, and resistivity of, what shall we say, fecal matter. Actually had that displayed on my website, basically to give you an idea of the different types of resistances that you would encounter in playing with the body. The skin happens to be your first line of protection. The surface of the skin is going to be anywhere from 50,000 to 5 million ohms. And so that's going to be your initial line of protection to limit the energy that goes into the body. Once it's in the body and past the fat layer, then, you know, you're right in very, very conductive salt solutions like blood and muscle tissue and things of that sort that encourage the higher currents being able to go through. So playing externally with pads or electrodes on the skin wind up being, you know, your first line of protection. And even if you're using an insertable, the mucous membrane in the anal cavity or the vaginal cavity tends to still have enough resistance to still limit the current that's going into you, that's going into the more conductive parts of the body.
So when you're using body contacts and probes and different things like that, when you get above the waist, I understand that a bipolar contact is the only way to go.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if, you know, I've talked to my partner and saying, well, you want to do like something on the nipples, I tend to only put electrodes on the right nipple because the heart muscle or the heart itself is biased towards the left of the breastbone. And, you know, I'm working on, as long as there's distance between the electrodes and the heart, the safer you are. Although, if the person has a heart condition, which is one of the things I talk about and negotiate, then, you know, I take that into account. We'll not play with a lot of people that have heart conditions.
Well, there's a huge risk for you if there is.
That's true.
Now, when you're talking about you will only play with the right nipple in this case, and you're saying that you're using a bipolar contact on that right nipple.
That's correct, right. And generally what I'll do is take the sticky pad and put it on one side of the nipple and the second sticky pad and put it on the other side of the nipple.
So many times I see that people will pull current from one nipple to the other, which is probably
one
the most
to the
risk.
Other. Right, yeah.
That's high risk.
Yeah, definitely. Because the current path tends to be stronger through the heart area that way.
Then another dangerous one is anything involving the left arm down into the body, whether you're going down into the groin area or a leg or something, and the left arm gets involved, that's a current path right through the heart.
Yeah, that's true. You know, certainly the riskiest one would be putting a pad on just to the right of the left nipple, which is basically right over the heart, and then the second pad on the back, directly opposite that pad, then everything goes through the heart.
Yeah, that's getting very close to an AED at that point.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Without the automatic part.
And no protection.
So everything we've been talking about here is kind of TENS related to where we're actually pulling current through muscles.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other types of electrical play is violet wand, which is a whole different kind of electricity in the body.
And that does it for the first installment of Uncle Abdul's interview. He will be back in the next few weeks with more electrical fun. I see Cassie wants to say something.
A bashful comment regarding episode 3 with Shiva's vessel on consensual non-monogamy. When it came to discussing those monogamous people who are in relationships with poly people, a couple of things should be pointed out. Shiva suggests that a person becomes mono when, in a poly couple, one person isn't as fortunate or doesn't find as many opportunities, and or has problems dealing with the stresses and emotions. While that may be true in many cases, it is not true for all monos. I myself am a mono in a relationship with a poly person. I simply don't want another relationship, and don't have time for one. He needs a lot of relationships to meet his needs. I do not. It's that simple. Being monogamous doesn't make me any less in terms of kink, sexuality or emotional depth.
That does it for another installment of the Kinky Cast. This has been episode 5 with Kate Kinsey and Uncle Abdul, authors and lecturers. We honor your input. Call us at 916-KINKY69 or email questions@kinkycast.com. Check our website for the Bashful tab to anonymously leave questions or comments. Join us each week for the journey through the kinky world of BDSM. On behalf of Woody, Beast, and Cassie, I'm Max. See you next week.